Today is Monday, March 11th, 2024. And we're at a heavy war. The funeral yesterday was right around the corner from my house. Another half block from where I left you off was the funeral of the soldier later that afternoon. I think it was 32 Chernyakhovsky. Achenu Chabet Yisrael Hanatunim B'tzara B'Shivya Homdim Bein B'yam Bein B'yabasha HaMakom U'Bein B'Avir HaMakom Yirachem Aleichem Yotzei Mitzara L'Vacha Me'afeilu La'orem Mishibut L'Gula Chashto B'Agala B'Zman Kariv V'Noma Amen. And I want to say something that brings me back to 1969, a vort that I never forgot. BMT was just getting started and we were davening Friday night at the Kotel, and we were walking back to Abarbanel where BMT began, 24 Abarbanel. And in the old city was a Yemenite gentleman who came over, we explained who we are, what we're coming from. And he says, "Ani rotza la'agid lehem mashehu, v'lo taki etchem ha'aretz. The land should not spit you out." And I'll never forget this eternity. He says, "You know, people try to come in Aliyah. They go back, they leave." He says, "They didn't leave. The land spat them out." And Tiruch, he said, that you shouldn't be among those that the land spits out. I never forgot that. Unfortunately, some of our Rabbanim lack, I don't want to talk about Talmidei Chachamim, but it's shocking. Rav Yitzchak Yosef, his statement Saturday night that if they draft yeshiva boys, they're all leaving the country. All I have to say is exactly what I said when Haaretz and Lo Aleinu, what we have with leftists, woke generation, they introduced a new word into the Hebrew language, relocation. Charlie, you never learned that word when you came in Aliyah, neither did I. And I remember saying to them, "Gesundheit, relocate, I'll carry your bags to the airport." I say to Rav Yosef, you have a long way to go to understand what Torah is about. But if you want to relocate, I'll arrange with my students. I can't carry today, I'm older. But I'll arrange with my students to carry your bags to the airport. V'lo taki etchem et ha'aretz. I also have to tell you, in this debate that goes on, you can't let it harm your health, because if you take it seriously, it just eats up away at you how Gedolei Yisrael can speak this way. And as I said yesterday, and I stand on it, we need both ends, both the Haredi world and the army have to be willing to accept each other. And I would like to, I had a long talk, my grandson's over, I had four generations Shabbat. In my house, my daughter's home nearby, and my grandson, all my grandsons, I don't have to tell you, we have one a career officer, but everyone else has served already in 3-4 wars, and they all told me that the army has to be arranged, that a Haredi can come in and not be on a base where there'll be women running around. I have no problem. My grandsons, I hope, have no problem. We grew up in Bnei Akiva. We grew up in Ezra. Women are part of the world. You have to know Eich Lehistaderitam. But I have to respect someone who can't handle a woman in the same room. I saw that with my own eyes. So I hope water will seek its own level. But I still stand on basic understanding of Torah. Learning Torah and serving in the army are not contradictions. One does not exempt the other. Chutzivah for chutzivah. Look into the Sefer HaMitzvot. And that's the Chatam Sofer. No one tops that Chatam Sofer, the Chidushim, the Sukkah. What's it? It's Lulav HaGazel, right? We found it in Yomo. It's in Lulav HaGazel, right? Where we found it. I know I marked it off in the volume downstairs because it's in the wrong place where it should be, but it's right there. And the Chatam Sofer asked the very question, which I've repeated so many times, we shouldn't put on tefillin in Israel. You're a lawyer, you're a businessman, you're involved. You shouldn't waste time davening. Also, for mitzvah, patam in a mitzvah. And if you go with that approach, there are no mitzvot left in Israel. But hutzivah. We have to do both. And that's the Gemara in Gittin, in the Megillah. It's an open Gemara that Yoshua Banun was not fighting at night and he didn't learn Torah. The Malach comes, Halaleinu Atalat Sareinu. How dare you be mevatel from Torah if you're not fighting? So you have to do both. And we have here two Lakewood fellas, and now a Chabadnik walked in, a Musmach of Morristown. You can't get any more Chabad than that. And as we sit here, his son is in Gaza. Understand, with all our other children and grandchildren. He's on Regila now. He's on Regila. But all right, I'll shame hatit. So this is the generation after the Holocaust. Okay, I just wanted to say that because Talmidim of mine get very upset with these statements. And we have to take them in stride. It's part of the Kibbutz Goliath and the Geula, and I'll talk about it on April 8th in a different context. Now, quite important, I was contacted by Yosef Tepperman, BMT alumni from 1974, and the 1974 crowd is trying to create a reunion. 50 years, it's a long time. Many lives were changed by those years in BMT. So I just want to mention, if you want to get on a mailing list, please contact the YU office here, Susan Sheldon, or contact Joseph Tepperman, Jerry Tepperman, cellular 054-316-1371, and put your name down, get onto the mailing list. As far as everyone is concerned, on April 8th, I'm giving a special class on the publication of a new book that comes about, Megalim Zchut al Yedei Zakai, comes about because of this classroom, and it'll be a special class entirely devoted to Pesach, BMT, the Horowitz family, tragedy, success, Balei Tshuva, and Chozrim B'Sheila. It'll all be here in this classroom, B'ezrat Hashem. Finally, let me come back to Volozhin and where we were these last few weeks or few months already. And before I come to Jack's question, let me just review briefly that the Netziv, as great as he was and as great as he becomes, but his beginning is filled with machloket. He's challenged by Rabbi Yeshua Heschel Levine, and then he's challenged by the Talmidim who want the Beit HaLevi. And finally, Gedolei Yisrael come in, including Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan Spector, and they give a psak, which finally, Yomo, make the a drop louder, which finally brings peace to Volozhin. Now, in the psak that was given, the Netziv becomes the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Yosef Tov becomes the Skan Rosh Yeshiva, and all the money which is collected by Meshulachim has to go into the safe, and each one has a key. You can imagine it's like a husband and wife who don't trust each other, so they have a safe, and the husband has one key, the wife has the other, and they can't open it without two keys. So Jack asked me that, how do you know it's safe? A safe, the Netziv, robbers can come in. I think the answer is very simple. Number one, I'd be afraid, even if I was a robber, I'd be frightened stiff to rob Voloshin, because the students proved themselves quite battle-worthy in every battle and in battles that will yet come, overly battle-worthy. Secondly, the yeshiva was occupying 24-7. Remember we said that there was sturm day and night. There was no time a thief could come in that they were not there to protect the yeshiva. So, Jack, I wouldn't worry. In Yerushalayim, I know friends of mine. The phone company worked for them, worked for another apartment with the latest development in internet. And Arabs were working, and a few weeks later, both were robbed. And safes were robbed, were pulled out of the wall by like a plow, some sort of mechanism. So today you have sophisticated robbers, and if you're not home, you're in trouble. But 150 years ago, the yeshiva was occupying around the clock. All right, now I want to pick up, I want to go further. There's no question that this was the golden period in Dinitziv's life. Reb Heschel Levine was out. The Beit HaLevi chose to leave. Why he actually chose to leave, a lot has been written, there's a lot of guesswork, but my own feeling is, having seen life, why be in a position where you have to open the safe with someone else? He wanted to be independent. Slutsk was an important rabbinate. That's where the Ribbaz is later. And that's where Rabbi Zalman Meltzer is later. Until World War I, you had Gedolei Yisrael there. So he had a chance to go on to an important rabbinate. Slutsky went to Brisk. The Netziv remained. Within a few years, his own son-in-law, Rabbi Rafael Shapiro, became his assistant. And Rabbi Rafael Shapiro, we ended off the class last week. That story is classic. I heard it from the Rav. I read about it. And the story says a world. And I just repeat it. If you didn't hear it yet, Mati, that the Rebbetzin came into the Beis Medrash. The Netziv's daughter came over to Rabbi Rafael and said, Rafael, Tuzlachan de Shabbos Kleida, Midaf Chasnan Machin Atoch the Bald. In an hour, we're marrying off our daughter, put on your Shabbos clothes. And Rabbi Rafael stands up and he looks at his Talmidim, ay, 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 tzah gidul banim. And anyone here who has children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. I already, Shabbat, I was zeichet to have a dog, a great-grandson of a dog. One of my great-grandchildren up in the Shomron, in addition to everything else, they own a dog. So, all right, Sagidul Banim. There's no question that whether of a foe, the Netziv is the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Rafael, an assistant, but not more. During this period, the Netziv faces tragedy. The wife of his youth, Rav Yitzchak's daughter, Bat Yerena, dies quite young. And now he's no longer related, blood relationship to Rav Yitzchak. But you see how important and central and focal he has become, that no one in the world considers saying to the Netziv, you're no longer part of the family. And he becomes the Rosh Yeshiva. The Netziv, with all that implies, everyone we speak about, everyone we speak of the Netziv in awe, with unbelievable derech eretz. I remember the Rav would mention his Elder Zeder, Reb Heschel Leib. He referred to the Netziv as Reb Heschel Leib. and this is the Netziv, this is the Netziv of the Lashon, and from this point on, we have a flood of memoir literature about the Netziv, who he was, how he ran the yeshiva, what his influence was, what was it like in the Lashon on a daily basis. Okay. Now, I want to take a volume that I referred to before, except I thought it was a doctorate. I see it's a master's. It's by a Talmidah from the Michlalab, Chanah Katz, Kuf Tzadi, meaning she's husband is not a Kohen. Anyone named Katz and you're not a Kohen, Minig Yisrael is to spell it not Kohen Tzedek, but Kuf Tzadi. It's a very famous lady. She's the daughter and niece of Gedolei Gedolei Yisrael, the three Rabbi Rav Fisher brothers. There were three brothers. One was an Av Beit Din in the Eda Charedit. One was an Av Beit Din in Agudat Yisrael's Beit Din. And her father was an Av Beit Din in Yerushalayim. He already was part of the Rabbanut. Also taught in Itri. Anyone here, anyone study in Itri, or it's before your time? I'm related today, I told you. My grandson, who lives down the block in Shachal, he's married to Rav Mordechai Elephant's great niece. So I have the closest relationship, because Rav Mordechai Elephant had no children, and this his brother had no children. This is his sister's grandchildren. And I remember his sister, Satomolzich Baklogan Samir. It's good to speak to you. Yiddish, you know, or your timing was already out of Lakewood. So Yitzchak Baklogan, she cried that her kids are religious Zionists. I told her you should get down on your knees and thank the Rebbeinu Shalom. What magnificent descendants. All right, religious Zionists. To me, they're the best Jews in the world. Okay. Now, Chanah Katz did a master's. It's a lot of secondary literature. She could have had a doctorate. If I was advising her, I would have told her to add on a number of chapters dealing with the responsive literature of the Netziv and putting him into focus, who he was, where he was, what he did, the questions he got, a lot more than the yeshiva. It would have been a doctorate, and that was my original plan for my doctorate in Bernard Revel Graduate School, which they pushed aside. I told you the story many times. I wrote it up, and it's written up in Revel. It's also written up in the volume that came out in memory of Bernard Lander, Bernie Lander, and they pushed aside the Netziv. Now, who was the Netziv? What was the atmosphere in the yeshiva? What was his total commitment, his total belief, the aura that he added to the yeshiva? And why would the Netziv have chopped off Yomo's head if Yomo was in the Lashon 150 years ago? And there's nothing to argue about. There's no ifs, ands, and buts. The memoir literature is flooded with this. Okay, let me begin at the beginning. I'm summarizing a lot of memoir literature. If you read her book, and I'm going to mention other books in the future, there is so much material. First of all, the Netziv was not an extremist. On many of the issues that he faced, he was not as extreme as Rabbi Yoshe Ber. The Beit HaLevi, see, it's interesting that Mori Rebbe, who's named after the Beit HaLevi, on a certain level, was more like the Netziv in Hashkafa than his other Elder Zeder, than the Beit HaLevi. Personality-wise, I'm told, the Rav was much more like the Beit HaLevi than the Netziv. They say Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was more like the Netziv. And in learning too, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik was an unbelievable bucky in Rishonim. He's we're sometimes overwhelmed by the Soloveitchik name, but Aaron Lichtenstein, Reb Aaron, stood in awe of his uncle. Speak about his uncle time and again. I mean, I was a kid. I knew Reb Aaron very well, but I didn't know him on the level of learning. That only came afterwards. And on all the issues you mentioned, and these were burning issues at the time, Haskalah, the rabbinic seminaries that were opened, Zionism, Chibat Zion, all this was being formulated. Reb Yosef Dov, to quote Rosh Yeshiva from Lakewood, tells Yichus, I don't want to tell you what context he said it in, or I'll have to maledict him, and if I won't maledict him, I'll be sick. So I want to avoid being sick and not maledict him. Let me not mention the context, but he said, Glatreif, Glatreif, Glatreif. This was Reb Yosef Dov. The Netziv, he could find a way to compromise. He could find a way not to be so negative. He could see the positive in it. But when it came to the yeshiva, all that mattered in the yeshiva was learning. See, that was his understanding of the yeshiva. You want to study literature, Haskalah, enlightened, Sifrut, Russian language, Zionism, all that was wonderful, but not in the yeshiva. The goal, purpose, heart of the yeshiva was learning. And here you have the descriptions, what I told you a few minutes ago, what we spoke about weeks ago. There was no other yeshiva in the world where there was learning 7/24. I learned in Lakewood. I learned in YU in a period where you had Reb Aaron Lichtenstein there and Reb Gershon Sadowski. All right. They left the Beit Medrash 1 o'clock, 1:10, 1:15. When I learned in Volozhin, there wasn't a moment, even after Yom Kippur, where the Netziv at times, Talmidim, Chaburot, always someone learning. The Beit Medrash could never be without learning. This is the Chaim Volozhin, this is the Nefesh HaChaim, this is the Netziv. If not for Torah, the world would collapse. The world would go under. But more than that, Lakewood in your time, till when was the, well, again, you had many, but in my time, there was one Beit Medrash. It's a different world. But I can say, if I remember correctly, by 1:30, the Beit Medrash was empty. There's no one left. When your time, what do you say? You were closer to my time.
it's already around the clock because we have about a few hundred people davening Masikin and coming a few hours early and till 2 there's people there.
3 o'clock in the morning, there were people in there. That would be Volozhin. That would be Volozhin. More than that, the Netziv himself, and here you have the Baruch Halevi Epstein, who ultimately becomes the Netziv's brother-in-law, basically. The Derech HaSuchan's son. Bezivik Sheni, the Netziv married the daughter of the Aruch HaSuchan. You follow check it out, because the Baruch Halevi calls my uncle the Netziv. You follow? It could be family-wise he was his uncle, but later on he marries Bezivik Sheni, his sister. Check it out, if I'm not mistaken. And she was a lot younger. And he had with her a very famous son, Rav Meir Berlin. He was well over 70. I remember Rav Yosef Weiss saying to us as children, how old was I? 14, 15, 15, let's say. So I remember him saying to us that the Netziv fathered a child when he was over 70. And we looked at him, how could it be? How could it be, Rav Meir Berlin? And the Netziv himself would come into the Beis Medrash. And 3 o'clock in the morning, 11 o'clock at night, and at 12 midnight, the son of Rabbi Chil Michel, who wrote the Makar Baruch and the Torah Tamima, he describes that he feels someone standing behind his back, and he'd look up and there's the Netziv. And he said, my uncle slept 2 hours, would wake up, learn another 2 hours, then go back to sleep for 2 hours. You follow? And this was the atmosphere. But more than that, and this is what I love, and this is where Yomo is in very, very heavy trouble. The Netziv, wow. There were students learning and davening. Sometimes the davening went overtime. There were students that continued davening on their own. And the Netziv went over to them and said, I want to caution you, you're davening too long. A yeshiva's for learning. It's not for elongated davenings. And this will explain to you what I'm an eyewitness to in Lakewood. You get all the impact it made upon me. Where Rabbi Aaron Cutler went over to Yossi Tendler and says, I want to come into you. It's my meaning, my dank, it's my feeling, my understanding. You're davening too long. Ayishmaneshra, you see luck. And wow, what's happening? Yomo, it's a terrific davener. I wish I could daven with such kavana. But if I would daven with such kavana, I'm being the same shas a third time now. I'm waiting for Horiot. You got the minute you can. I'm flying now in Makkah. Wow. When would I learn? When would I read? When would I prepare Sheyurim? I have hundreds of thousands of sheets. I'm sure I've never repeated a shir. What's going to be with all this? I got to find someone who can take on, I'll give you 100,000 pages of chidushim, of notes, of insight sources. And Yossi, take it further. No? When would I do it? When would I write? I'm just proofreading now chapter 3. Chapter 4 is ready to go to Evelyn, waiting for Vic to get home to deliver it. And I told Evelyn she can't touch it till after Pesach. Our balabasta is going to type now. But you don't believe chapter 3. Yossi, were you ever interested in the relationship between the Rav and Rabbi Belkin? Believe me, when you study chapter 3, you're going to say, ach, Rakefet, good man. Good man. On chapter 3 alone. But this was Reb Aaron. More than this, this was the Netziv. See, when I was a kid in Lakewood, I was shaking. We were talking. The Rosh Yeshiva said to Yossi, Ich will euch bemerken, I remember word by word. Ich will euch bemerken, du darfst sie vielleicht. I was shaking. I was like Yehuda Dov. I didn't understand. I think, Rav Aaron Cutler. Ah. 60 years later. Should I say 70 years later? Not 60. 70 years later. Do I understand Rav Aaron? That's a yeshiva. You want to go daven? Go elsewhere. Go to Morristown. Go to 770. Go to Lubavitch 1896 in Lubavitch in the side room. Remember the memoir literature I read in class? But here in Volozhin, me learned Tera. But I'm going to reveal more secrets now. Yep. I'm going to reveal more secrets. Believe me, if I reveal these secrets a few blocks from here, they tar and feather me in Kiryat Moshe. And if I reveal these secrets a few blocks from here in Washington Heights, they tar and feather me. But I hope the truth will protect me. Yehuda Dov, what you're about to hear, even your father doesn't know. I go back a lot of years now. You see, in Volozhin, it began a tradition that carried over to almost all, I'll say. There's a slight exception, but it's not really an exception. I don't want to get into the Vodic now. Extremism was not appreciated. You want to be extreme in learning. Matmet. Shas, poskim, chobdas under the hand. I have it under my hand today. Ask me what you want. Oh, that's important. Someone that can take apart a kuntis of shach in your adeya and analyze it. I got already comments on my shiur yesterday that I should have, you know, there's more to speak about the shach I quoted with asking different questions in the Choshen Mishpat and manuscripts. So I had to apologize. I wrote to one Talmud of mine, a sub-Talmud who I never met, but he's been studying with me for years. I wrote to him, I lectured on this about 30 years ago for 2 years. Yesterday I just scratched the surface because I mentioned the Choshen Mishpat. I mentioned the shach. But that's important. You know who was considered too frum when he learned in Volozhin? Reb Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook. Rav Cook came from a Chassidish background. And he had tzidkut in him. You didn't find that type of tzidkut in Volozhin. We look at it today, when we look back, Rav Cook, not only a gon, a chassid, a tzaddik. In Volozhin, they looked at it, shtick, you follow? But it's not, this is not Volozhin. You read the memoir literature, you'll understand what I'm saying. Yossi, in 1,000 years, you couldn't understand that unless you are part of the Nitziv's understanding. A yeshiva is for learning. Learning. Shas, paiskim, knowledge. Frumkeit, davening, it's all beautiful. Out of the yeshiva. Later. The yeshiva, around the clock. Learning. And now I'll let you in on a secret. You didn't go to YU, so it won't help. But you went to part of YU. No, you knew a certain personality there that we all revered. He was a breath of French air with vadimkeit, zest, spirit. When he shook your hand, you felt warmth. Reb David Lifshitz. No, you've heard the name, the Tzuvalka Rav. Where did he learn? Mir. First in his main Rebbe was Reb Shimon Shkop. First he learned in Grodno, then he went to Mir. Mir was a big attraction. come back with me and ask the Altamira. Nu, du kennst Rav David Lifshitz, aber hat er dazu wankert. Es gibt ein bisschen Zifrum. Zifrum für mir. You follow? He had a beard when he studied in Mir. Kenny, did you have a beard when you studied in Mir? They would have left you out of the school, out of the yeshiva. Who heard of a beard? Who heard of a beard in Slabatka? But Reb David had a beard. He already, the frumkeit, the added level, the zishkeit, the warmkeit, he was Reb David already as a kid. Charlie, I yet knew people who complained about him. You follow me? I wouldn't use the word complain. Critiqued him. Es gibt Zifrum von uns in mir. Learning. Clean shaven. What did Reb Chanuch Fishman tell me? Reb Chanuch, my main link to the past, near. Reb Chanuch, remember I told you? I once asked him, Rebbe, do you regret anything you did in Mir? He said, Ein zacha b'chfari, but one thing I regret. L'chadodi, l'chuna ranana, he learned Gemara. Who davened? Yesi, when you were alive 1,000 years ago, 700 years ago, 600 years ago, did you say, l'chuna ranana, l'chadodi? Understand? The Reb Shlomo Alkabetz. Go to Tzfat. You have his grave there. Thank him for what he did. I don't know how we could be good Jews today without l'chadodi. It's the last addition to the davening that every nusach has. Sfadim, Ashkenazim, Yekirs, Taimanayim, Rakins, Jerba, everyone, l'chadodi. Ah, what a l'chadodi. Migdash melech yimalucha. Okay. And Reb Chanuch was learning Gemara. But see, he matured. He said, Ein zacha b'chfachibu. One thing I regret. But see, that was v'lashon. That was v'lashon. That influences all the yeshivot that come along. And I can understand what the Baron Cutler said to Yossi Tendler. Believe me, Bishas Maisa, 70 years ago, I was 16, and I'm 86. I was shocked, because I still remember. Fatumult. Was war Taham hat das gemacht in Yeshiva? My Yiddish is not bad, considering I'm a third generation American and I had a choke on Yiddish, but we picked it up. But it's more than that. See, in all these great movements that came along, the Netziv was ambivalent, the best word to use. He was open. See, it wasn't like the Beit HaLevi that, according to the memoir literature, was 100% against Haskalah, 100% against the Russian language. Tremendous problems with Chibat Zion, later you see Reb Chaim, his son, Reb Chaim Brisker, writes a letter against the Zionists that just to read it burns the pages. The Tziv was not like that. An ambivalent attitude in favor. Not in the yeshiva. Not with learning. Some examples. The most important movement that came along in the 19th century, a number of years after Volozhin began, was the Musa movement. And the Musa movement, Rabbi Israel Salanter, Rabbi Israel Lipkin, whatever name you know him by, he was an Adam Gadol, head and shoulders above everyone else in learning. There was absolute unanimity that he was Echad Megadolei Yisrael. But when you speak in terms of the Musa movement, it means another Seder, a Musa Sefer. A Musa Sefer. What's a Musa Sefer doing in a yeshiva? A yeshiva? Shas, Paiskim, Lumdis. But Musa? They didn't greet the Musa movement with open arms. On the other hand, what's wrong with the Musa movement? Its goals are fabulous. Modern day challenge. Enlightenment outside. Secular Zionism. French Revolution. Industrial Revolution. We need Musa to remain solid, to remain firm, to remain dedicated, to have a drive, an understanding, a commitment. Learning shouldn't simply be like learning biology or chemistry. And it's fascinating. When it came to the Musa movement, ultimately, even the Lashon experimented with Mashkichim. You take the yeshiva afterwards, Slabak, Nevadik, Mir, Tells, there wasn't a yeshiva that ultimately did not get involved with the Musa movement. Kelm, graduate school of Musa. And the reason was very simple. The times demanded it. You could afford to say no Musa in the yeshiva when there are no outside challenges. When the challenges came one by one, ultimately, Gedolei Yisrael reached the conclusion that the Musa is helpful, positive, desirable. And this was the Netziv. If you would have asked him in the 40s, 50s, 60s, would have had a very ambivalent attitude towards Musa. By the 70s, 80s, we're positive. Tzorech Hashah, we need it. And I need not tell you that Mori Rebbe, one of the most brilliant paragraphs that he ever wrote, you know, whatever the Rav wrote, you shiver, you shake when you touch it, because it's so insightful and innovative. But perhaps one of the most brilliant paragraphs is Ish Halacha, where he analyzes the Musa movement, tells the famous story how the Balei Musa sent Shluchim, Rabbi Yitzchak Blaza, to the Lashon to talk, we need Musa. And their attitude was, you people in Kovner are sick, you need castor oil. Good, strong Musa. We in the Lashon, we in Brisk are not sick. We don't need the same strong Musa. But even the Rav admitted, when Musa matured, and he uses the example Slabatka, Gadla Ta'ada, even the Velazhen Briska crowd accepted the Musa with open arms. And I can tell you, Eidet Nemana Ashrei Ayin Ra'atazot. When I learned, again, the YU I refer to is the YU of the 50s. It's my formative years. Maybe the 60s, although then I already was teaching. I was part of YU and as a Rebbe. And, wow, I was forging souls for the future. Until today, there's someone on screen right now who first met me back in the 60s. And I can tell you, Ashrei Ayin Ra'at Hazot, the mashgiach of the yeshiva, once every few months, he visited every class in yeshiva giving a sicha, a musa shmuas. He visited me in 51 when I was in Rabbi Michal Katz's freshman, sophomore high school class. And he visited me when I was in the Rav's class years later. Then he visited my students when they were in my class. And the mashgiach would come in to the Rav's shiur, and the Rav, he would sit here, the mashgiach, and the Rav would sit down in front of him and listen to the shmuas like a Talmud bifnei Rabbo. That's how much he valued the sichot of Rav Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen, who published many, many volumes afterwards with all one theme, Gadlut HaAdam. So it was a sight to see. But you see, the Netziv was ambivalent. Later they realized, without Musa, Torah will not thrive at that point in the new world. Call it the Western world, the modern world. Today they call it the woke world, the Industrial Revolution, French Revolution, American Revolution. What a world. And take a look, after so many revolutions and so much modernity, as we sit here, how many countries are at war with each other, how many people are being killed, being tortured. It's beyond comprehension, the world in which we live and what we have done to it. But okay, this is the challenge. Let me go a drop further. Same thing with Hasidut. Reb Chaim Volozhin totally opposed the Hasidut. Reb Yitzchak Volozhin already had a much more, I would say, ambivalent attitude. If Reb Yitzchak already was ambivalent, then it's Siv al Achat Kama Vakama. And while there weren't many Hasidim in the Lushan, there certainly were many of Hasidic origins. There were many who still retained some Hasidic practice, and the Netziv never was opposed. There no longer was any trace of Machloket. But as far as learning Chassidus, Svarim, not in the yeshiva. Yeshiva, Shas, and Poskim. Anything else you want to do, you do on your own. Haskalah, and we'll come back to this in great detail. Volozhin was not a bastion unto itself. It was not a fortress unto itself. The world was overwhelmed. It was enticing. Morty, you're learning in Lakewood, but there's a big world out there. You see today advertisements I see in press papers that will reach the right-wing yeshiva world, all types of university degrees being offered. A shtick. I don't know how much the degrees are worth, but I take a look. Don't have to go to college. You can take all the courses while you remain in yeshiva. It's a lot of enticement. Haskalah, modern Hebrew, the Enlightenment took on positive steps in Eastern Europe. It didn't result like in Germany, and no one knows Hebrew, no one knows how to pray in Hebrew. Reform Judaism, intermarriage, assimilation, conversion, Eastern Europe, beautiful modern Hebrew. Well, you want to read, you want to understand, you want to be knowledgeable. Time and again, there were students who were reading on the side. Bizman she'ena yom ve'ena laila. Not in the yeshiva. Then it's if, not against Haskalah, Pasuk Haskalah, Torah Haskalah, Zionist Haskalah. Then it's if, as you know, Friday night when he was tired and couldn't concentrate anymore, read some of the weekly magazines, periodicals in Hebrew, Hamelitz, others. This is what they got into trouble in Lakewood. My uncle Denitziv, Rabbi Leah Halevi Epstein's description of his uncle. And in Lakewood, when that book was passed around, they censored it. But this was the reality. This was Denitziv. He was not extreme. He was not like the Beit Halevi. He was extreme that the yeshiva is sacred to learning. Not Haskalah, not Russian, not like YU, not like his great-great-grandson, the Rav, but not opposed. Very few, if any, were ever thrown out of the yeshiva for being broad in what they thought and what they learned. Similarly, you have the best example of all when it comes to Zionism. Religious Zionism was born in Volozhin. The most important sentence that was ever coined and used by religious Zionism, that we repeat today, March 11th, 2024. Unfortunately, many times a day, that we repeat to our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, which is most dear and precious to us, that very sentence was born in Volozhin. Anyone know what sentence I'm referring to? Chaim Nachman Bialik, the end of the poem, Uvemotam Tzivulanu Et HaChaim. You've heard that time and again. This is why we're alive, how we have courage, how we go further, how we remain proud Jews, Israelis. Friday night in my children's shul, Friday night I walk a little bit further from my house, not far, far, but a little further. I have shuls up the steps. So I walk to Palmach. There's a shul there that goes back to the old city that came out in 48. It's had number of locations, but this now is going to be permanent in the sense the shul brought in with the city to rebuild a building that the city took over from Arabs in 48, and they now have rights, not just chesed, but rights as part of what they're paying for. Every shul needs someone to take care of it. I don't know how my son-in-law, a career officer entirely in intelligence, security, etc., decorated, and my daughter, a lawyer, Tawenet Rabbani, they became a Rav and Rebbetzin for the last 30 years. They mamish had the Rav and Rebbetzin of the shul. So I daven there Friday night. The shul is mobbed. I never saw anything like it. They're breakaways, and with every breakaway, the shul doubles in size. You got to sit inside, outside. Shul is mobbed. And there's a section, old-time Israelis, famous Israelis, Supreme Court judges, half the medical staff of Shaarei Tzedek. Then they have the whole English section, all the Anglos. Then you have the English Anglos, the American Anglos, the French, French professor. I never saw a shoe with so many famous people. And There was someone at the shul this Friday night. Jack knows him very well. He's from Toronto. And this person, his during Lechadot, his eyes, he's not a youngster. He works on, his charity is to, he works with a committee that worked to identify unknown soldiers from 48. When they identify someone, it's like the biggest simcha. They had a tremendous simcha. They identified someone who got off the boat, got to Palestine, a survivor of Hitler, and died a few days later in battle. No relatives, no one knew the name. Shem Yerachem, the price we have paid. And this tzaddik looks at me, and he says, I'm the happiest person to be alive that I'm here. And I looked at him, I said, you just think for a minute, thinking, we're at war. Our children are suffering. Tzaddikim are dying. People are giving their lives for us. We have to put up with self-hating idiot Jews like the Oscar last night, moron, conquered territory. If we don't hold on to the Jordan, a state the size of Rhode Island, cut in five parts, can't survive. Idiots, look what we've been through. Biden, non-Jews. And this guy is jumping and dancing and his eyes are filled with tears. I'm the happiest person to be alive. And you know something? He's absolutely correct. And I told him, you know why we're so happy? Because we chose correctly. I think back to the people I left behind in 69, my dear friends, the children they raised, their values. I don't want to elaborate. Forget it. From, everyone's from. Values, my children, their values, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, values, Lawrence, Teaneck, Munson, Beverly Hills, wow, Zionism, very big, came on the scene with miracles. Yes, we were influenced by the non-Jews. The Poles were fighting for freedom. The Czechoslovakians were fighting for freedom. What did Rav Kalisha write in Drishat Zion? What a Chilul Hashem it would be if we don't fight for our freedom, for our Eretz Yisrael. And this became very, very big. Captured most of the Lashon. Most of the Lashon. Chaim Nachman Bialik, a classic example. In his poetry, in Nafshech HaLadad, HaMatmid, Arsaf Beit HaMedrash, what's he writing about? They say, by the way, it's a whole machlokes of scholars, academia, who Bialik was writing about in HaMatmet. The main opinion is, it's Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, that he was the tremendous Matmet, the Chassid, the overwhelming individual who combined the best of all our Torah worlds. That's who Bialik was writing about. No sentence ever called Amba Motam, Tzivu Lanu Et HaChayim. The Netziv, one of the early fathers of Chovevei Tzion, spoke, preached, taught, but not in the yeshiva. See, the yeshiva, only learning. There were organizations, groups, Talmidim, Zionists, but clandestinely. This was a sideshow. It's not the heart of the yeshiva. By the way, you have prime examples. Rav Moshe Mordechai Epstein was part of a whole Zionist group, Later, Slabodka goes on Aliyah, Hebron goes on Aliyah. Where did he get those roots from? Belashen. Rabbi Yisrael Zalman Meltzer. You look what Lakewood fellas, when Lakewood honored me, I said to Aaron Cutler and the whole big crowd there listening, I said, if Rabbi Aaron Cutler, your grandfather, had come in Aliyah and joined Rabbi Yisrael Zalman Meltzer, your whole family today would be in my camp, the Chassidus. No one could deny it. No one could. If you're honest, you can't deny it. But and all those roots came from Volozhin. But you see, once again, it was clandestine, on the side, secondary, mainstream, medaf learning. You're in yeshiva, shas, paiskim, learning. These are the golden years. Reb Shimon Shkop once took a son back to, they visited Volozhin, and eyewitnesses later recounted that Reb Shimon showed his son the bench he sat in when he learned in Volozhin. And he said to his son, these were the greatest and best years of my life. And this is true. I went back to YU. I was being honored, Baruch Hashem, appreciated by YU. And I went into room 102. And it doesn't exist the way it did in my time. It was one room then that for the Rav, they broke open the wall because this class got bigger. Now they combined it again. But I showed a few people standing near me exactly where my chair was when I sat next to the Rav. You could show it right up front in front of the blackboard. Right here. These were the greatest, most wonderful moments of my life. And this was the Netziv. And he published a very famous work on Shemitah. Dvar HaShemitah, the Kuntres has been published many times. Dafka, he was opposed to the Chetah Mechira. The Chetah Mechira became the cause celebre in religious Zionist circles. And the Netziv was one of the great names that was opposed to the Chetah Mechira. I need not tell you that ultimately the Chetah Mechira carried the day. Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan was behind it. And other Gedolei Yisrael were behind it. Zman Hazeh, Shemitah only the Rabbanon. At most, it could only be it's a minhag. There's a lot you can go into when dealing with Shemitah. The Chetah Mechira proved very important because in the first Shemitah, I believe it was 1884, some of the colonies simply disappeared off the map. They didn't work. They didn't work the land. Malaria took over. And it becomes a challenge until today how we could ever work out an agrarian society. On the other hand, Shemitah is not the Oraita. According to the Rambam, according to Maimonides, you have to have all the Shvatim in the proper place. So we're still far from achieving the ultimate. Can we succeed one day without being Samach on the Chetah Mechira? This is an open question. Right now, it's a depressing time because we're at war and the economy is so down and stagnant. But this question hangs fire. A lot of improvements were made in the Chetah Mechira. You see, the Netziv raised the issue that Lo Techanem, that what do you accomplish by selling the land if you're not allowed to sell the land to Gentiles? So a lot has been written that Arabs are not Gentiles because they're not all day Avodah Zarah, which is true. Arabs are not all day Avodah Zarah. According to their belief, they have to kill every Catholic because a Catholic is all day Avodah Zarah. Follow it. That's why I wouldn't be happy to be a Catholic in the modern world when you give in so much to Iran and let them do whatever they want to do. The Jews are better off because we're not idol worshippers. We also have a different protection. In order to take care of us as Iran would want, they'll also kill the 20 million Arabs. So maybe they'll think twice about doing anything. But hitting the East Coast and St. Patrick's Cathedral is right up their bowling alley where Hamevin Yavinoti. So there's a lot to be written. Then there's a big improvement today. I think it goes back to Rav Gorin. It has to be checked out. Rav Shlomo LeGorin Gorenchik. But there's a big improvement today in the Hetter Mechira. They don't sell the land. They sell only the upper amount of land in which something can grow, so that the basic land remains the Jew. But the land in which the produce is going now belongs to Hetter Mechira. So it's fascinating. A lot is being done. But originally, it all goes back to the Netziv, Vized, Davach, Hashmita, Shamot. And there's Musar in there that we've waited so long to come back to the land. We have to come back and observe and not look for Chaterim, etc. But there's much more to the Netziv. And here I want to come to the most famous document the Netziv ever wrote. And I don't know if we'll finish it today, but this document is so crucially important, and I'll tell you why. I discussed it in passing many, it may be decades ago already, when I dealt with the problem that has haunted us on the American scene, mixed board of rabbis, synagogue council. Now, a lot of people, you take the mixed board of rabbis, synagogue council, when you fellas learned in Lakewood, when I learned in Lakewood, but when I learned it wasn't already halacha lemaisa, it becomes halacha lemaisa in, it was almost halacha lemaisa my time, 1956. The United States of America, it took a few hundred years for a American Torah lifestyle to start developing. Before 1886, you have absolutely next to nothing. Although you had Isaac Leeser in Philadelphia, who was a not a great Talmud Chacham, but certainly knowledgeable and wrote a great deal, followed Rav Hirsch, Yeshurin, the Germans. He didn't have smicha, but he was a reverend. But he never was able to establish anything that could continue. In 86, you have the first yeshiva ketana opened in America on the east side of New York. A few years later, they bring Chief Rabbi Jacob Joseph to America. You recall my lectures on this. And 1897, Rabbi Matlin begins teaching. He wants to teach his son, who graduated elementary school, is now in high school, wants him to learn Gemara after high school. And in order to get him to learn Gemara, he starts a shiur in his dining room. His son brings a few friends, and Rabbi Matlin begins to teach Gemara to a group of kids on the east side of New York. Out of that little get-together, they decide that half a year later, the chief rabbi of Kovna dies, Rabbi Yitzchok Hanan Spector, Gadol Mirabin Shemo, and they name that little study group Yeshivat Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. And it takes time. It starts to develop. It starts to grow. All these years, the Reform and the Orthodox barely knew each other, cared about each other. The Reform were the big German crowd. Every store that your grandparents ever bought in, Abraham Strauss, Klein's, Macy's, Gimbel's, Saks Fifth Avenue, Marcus and Neiman, named the store. There wasn't a mass wholesale retail store, clothing, house articles. Everything was owned by German Jews. Not one of them was a Shema Torah and Mitzvah. I think the first family ever to own a store that becomes a chain of stores were the Schottensteins. They should live and be well. Tremendous schuyot, that family. And until today, in Dolditch, stores are owned by the stock market, etc. They have shares in it. There are plenty of non-Jewish partners. The original store in Columbus, Ohio, is Shema Shabbat. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. I visited Columbus many years ago, and the store was Shema Shabbat, the original store, to show that the family valued Shabbat. Kol HaKavod. So you see, the Orthodox, the Lower East Side, even the Solar Pool, a few Spanish Portuguese, but they had nothing in common. On the other hand, there was never any incriminations, never any controversy, never any charomim. The reform of the reform, we're Orthodox, we each go our merry way. Following World War I or the early 1900s, the East Europeans are pouring into America. And there's a second generation born in America already. No one lives forever and no one lives on. You come into America, a greenhorn, an immigrant, I can't even, Kenish Dredna, what in English, English. You come in 1880s, by 1900s, you have endless children, by 1920, endless grandchildren. And they already want a rabbi who speaks English. They're under the pressure of the Western generation. Men and women shouldn't sit separately. It's a disgrace. Women go to high school. Women go to normal college, teachers' college. Women are going to go to university. Today, women are all over the place. And when they come to the shul, they have to sit separately as if they're inferior. And conservative movement begins. Conservative movement becomes very big, very attractive to the East Europeans because it's more Jewish than the Reform. Part of the davening is in Hebrew. Only a small part is in English. The Reform are entirely in English. Only maybe 5% is in Hebrew. And now you have an entire breakdown. Yeshiva College, 1930, 1940, 1950. 40 to 50% of the graduates of Yeshiva College, or should I say 30 to 40%, go to the seminary, go to JTS, one after another. And whether they believe in conservative or don't believe in conservative, they're at the seminary. The masses don't differentiate anymore. Many of these conservative rabbis went with all the intention of remaining strong and frum and dedicated, and they wind up conservative. Their children, some of their children, conservative, reform, even less. Other conservative rabbis, closet Torah Jews, but in public they have to play the role, the conservative rabbi. Some of them have kids, tzaddikim, mamish tzaddikim, lamdonim, Rosh Yeshiva, Gedolei Yisrael. Who is your father? I don't want to tell you in public, I'll whisper it to you. A conservative rabbi of a conservative temple. Now, the Rav, when this issue finally exploded in 1956, the Rosh Yeshiva, led by Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Gedalia Shor, Rav David Lifshitz, Rav Mendel Sachs, Rav Yisrael Ruderman, can go on and on, the Tells of Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Katz, Rav Bloch, can go on and on, Rav Gruzovsky, Rav Ruben Gruzovsky, 11 Rosh Yeshiva, read Silver, it's all there, Silver era. And they put a Cherem, Chas V'Chalila, Torah Jews should associate on an official basis, rabbis would reform conservative, synagogues would reform conservative, they put a cherem on this practice, this behavior. More than anyone, the Rav refused to sign the cherem. I say more than anyone because there was one other person who was asked to sign who refused to sign, and that was Reb Lezer Silva. And it shows you Reb Lezer Silva, though he wasn't a Rosh Yeshiva, but he was a Gaon Adir, an unbelievable Talmud Chacham, probably the first Talmud Chacham to become a Talmud Chacham in the United States. I heard this from many people, that he came to America, a Lamdan, but not a Gaon Adir. And he sat in Harrisburg and he learned around the clock, a small shtela, and by the time he left Harrisburg, he was a Gaon Adir that even the Rav stood in awe of his learning. So Reb Lezer refused to sign. He said the reason he refused to sign was his own son and son-in-law were graduates of Yeshiva College, and his son was a musmach from the yeshiva, and he said that if he signs, it'll only harm yeshiva, that the whole purpose that the other yeshiva want to harm yeshiva, and he will not sign, harm yeshiva university, because they have a college. He would not sign. The Rav refused to sign. The Rav's refusing to sign, that already created a storm that is discussed until today. And everyone thinks the Rav was so liberal and open-minded. So I want to, now I return to the Netziv, and I'll show you what's amazing. The Rav open-minded. He was exactly like the Netziv. I don't know if he was as open-minded of the Netziv on this very topic. And here I come a step further with the Netziv. When you think of the Netziv, everyone thinks of him as Rosh Yeshiva. All right, he was Rosh Yeshiva. He also was the Rav of Volozhin. He was unlike many members of his family. He was a posek. Later in life, Reb Chaim takes over. A guy named Rakefet gave endless shurim on Reb Chaim, and Rakefet made the point, and he challenged anyone to prove him wrong. And I'll ask Rakefet, has anyone proved him wrong? No, until today, no one has proved him wrong. Okay. He was a posek. He wrote responsive literature, Shelet and Shuvet. Tell me, Natan, in all your research with Natan and Netanya, have you come up with one tshuva that Reb Chaim Brisker wrote? Doesn't exist. Doesn't exist. Show me a tshuva that Reb Moshe wrote. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. Show me a tshuva that the Rav wrote. Show me a tshuva. I told Morty, the original Morty in class, I told Morty that my time with that incident with the divorce, remember I told you one day in 56, 57, we saw the Rav was very disturbed. He said, Revi, what's happening? What's happening? Something is bothering you. And the Rav broke down and told us, yes, something is bothering him. And he told us the whole story of the get and the beetle, the get and the money and what went on. And the Rav said, so he said, Rebbe, what was the outcome? And he said, I'll write a tshuva, he says, the chatan didn't, I can't go into it now, I explained it in the past many times. The chatan didn't know what he's totally doing. Have you ever seen that tshuva, Yehuda Dov? If you would see that tshuva, I could get you $5 million for it, without exaggeration. You never saw it. I never saw it. Who wrote tshuva in the Brisker family? They would ask Reb Simcha Zelek would write a tshuva. But the Rav, Reb Moshe, Reb Chaim, they ruined Psak. You know that. That's why in Slabodka, the Altar of Sabaka had to make a certain, a special koilel, a koilel for Psak Halacha, that some of the outstanding Talmidim, including Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, was one of them. He would support Rav Lessen, who was a Shtat Rav already, the Mashkiach of YU. He helped raise money, and this was to produce about 10 Rabbanim who knew how to paskin, who could serve on the RCA based. And you follow? Without that, who could know it? I mean, Lerin, Rashi, Ram, Toisvis, Rambam, Ravit, Machoikas, Apoiskim, Rishonim, we have to understand what the Rishonim is saying. But to reach a conclusion, I told you more than once, I'm ashamed to say this, I had Rebbeim from Mir. I loved them, I spoke with them every day, spoke and learned. At times I would ask them shailas, and they would say, I quote, Ich weiß nicht allein wie zu paskin. I don't know alone, I had a paskin. I remember, I can mention names, it's not important now. Today, so many decades later, I can paskin, not afraid. I know how, I've done shema shavu. I was matar in a guna, it's not a small matter. But the netziv, unlike what develops in his family, he was a posek mufak. Now, the name of his shelot and shuvit is called shelot and shuvit meshiv davar. It's chelik aleph siman mem bet. And I'll just start the tshuva. We'll go into it in detail next week. It's the most important tshuva. It gives you his whole hashkafa. Yomo will never have a question, what did the Netziv think on these topics? It's right here, black and white. And I have news for you. This is the first time I believe this question has ever been asked in East European context. In West European context, I have to give you a drop of background. German Orthodoxy began Yesh Meyayin, ex nihilo. There was almost absolutely nothing left. The Enlightenment so blinded the Jews that ultimately everyone ran for conversion, intermarriage, assimilation, as fast as they could. You all know what I've said about Moses Mendelssohn, the Ben Moshe Mendelssohn. He was the great-grandson of the Ramah. He did not have one great-grandson who died Jewish. He had one grandson, I'm told, who died Jewish, not one great-grandson. Along came one individual who was what we call Mishugar Ledavar Echad. Reb Shimsh Rafal Hirsch, a young man. I was just reading Tzvi Goldstein, Rabbi Goldstein from Hakolto. He writes his introduction, how he discovered Rav Hirsch. From his father, he discovered Rav Soloveitchik, Moriu Rebbe, and from his readings, he discovered the 19 letters, and he was overwhelmed by it, overwhelmed. Then he shows similarities between the Rav and Rav Hirsch. Very nice introduction to his work, showing how from the halacha you can get a Torah philosophy, a Jewish philosophy. A young man, it's good to see the new generation taking over. Kenny, it warms my heart, because hemshech yud, continuity. Without that, we've accomplished nothing. And young man and many others, Baruch Hashem. So Rav Hirsch comes into Frankfurt, and he doesn't even have I don't know if he had a minion Shomer Shabbos, if he had a minion people putting on tefillin in Frankfurt am Main. This was an Ir V'Ein B'Yisrael that had Gedolei Yisrael. He describes the mikvah. I'm quoting. He says it was in a passageway fit for swine, not for humans. Quote, end quote. My wife saw that in Philadelphia. My wife still went to the South Philly mikvah, 61, 62. Right when we left, the new million mikvah in Logan was built. And within a few years, you couldn't go to that neighborhood. Today, South Philly has state-of-the-art Lower Merion mikvah. But then, Ir HaNidachat. So, Rav Hirsch went to work. And little by little, Jew by Jew, family by family, he rebuilt Torah. It was called Neo-Orthodoxy. I would say it's his detractors that called it Neo-Orthodoxy. Maybe you can say it's a compliment. What Neo-Orthodoxy means, it's a new orthodoxy. This is not the orthodoxy like 100 years ago when they didn't know how to speak any language outside of the ghetto. They didn't know Germans. They have Nogavis Yiddish. They didn't know French. They didn't know English. This is not an orthodoxy that doesn't know science and mathematics and literature, world literature, good world literature. This is neo-orthodoxy. All right, call it neo-orthodoxy. And it caught on. Jews have souls. People came back. But the reform and conservative kept on saying, we're equal. We're the same. You have choice. Tripartite division, pluralism, all these beautiful words you hear today that lead to total assimilation. Today doesn't lead to the church. There's no church left. No one has belief. There's no God left in the world. It's unbelievable what has become of the world. No one opens a Bible. Imagine you quote in public that God gave us the land of Israel. All these famous Jews, Lo Aleinu, gets an Oscar award and laughs at his people for claiming Israel belongs to them. Shem Yirachem. It's a challenge for us. So he wanted to make sure that everyone understands Lo Darki Darkeichem V'lo Machshavotai Machshavoteichem, and there's nothing in the world reform, not Judaism. Now, the problem presented itself because in Germany, like in Israel, you pay taxes and the government gave you back education, a police force, temples, houses of worship. In every community, there was one joint community, one kehillah, one gemeinde, where everyone belonged. You couldn't leave. You're Jewish. That's where you belong. That's where you get money back from the government. Build your temples. Rav Hirsch pleaded with the Prussian parliament, we have to have the right to form our own community. Austritt. To walk out of the general community. 1876, the law of secession was passed, and Prussia permitted your Torah Jews, Orthodox Jews, you can form your own Gemeinde, your Austritt Gemeinde, and when it comes to dividing up the money, at the end of the year, we'll see in the general community there, 100,000 Jews in the Austritt community, there are 50,000 Jews. We give 100,000 mark to the general, 50,000 to the Austritt. And Germany set the example. This later becomes the example for the Synagogue Council, Board of Rabbis, all that happens in America. What's fascinating is in East Europe, where the assimilation was not that strong, the Enlightenment was less leaving Judaism, less reforming Judaism, than bringing another hue and coloration, literature, modern Hebrew, Zionism. Yes, unfortunately, slowly but slowly, it broke down Torah observance as well. The Rav always would say, after World War I, there was Chilul Shabbos b'Prachesia in every big Jewish city. You never saw that before World War I. But after World War I in the big cities, some of the smaller shtetl that were 90% Hasidish from, you didn't have Chilul Shabbos b'Prachesia. But in the big cities, widespread Chilul Shabbos. And all the literature you'll read, you'll see how true it is. So it seems one Friday night when the Netziv was reading the Gilyon, one of the Gilyonot of Magzikei Hadat, it was called, like Hamelitz, Hebrew, discussion, the whole concept of having a newspaper was revolutionary. Got to remember, this is the modern world. Today, we have the computer. Our computer is a newspaper. My children asked me, when was the last time you turned on the television? I said, we can't remember. It's years ago. Have a big television, not a big one, television screen, nice screen. Haven't watched it in years. Have the computer, has everything. Live. It's your news, articles. The whole concept of a newspaper is modern. A journal, a periodical. Early 70s, the Rebbe was under attack because he instituted, innovated, Kol Ein V'Bat Matlikan Neirot Shabbat. A guy named, I already said in my classes in Israel, the Rebbe's a genius. He gave the girls a mitzvah that's theirs, uniquely theirs. They need something today. You can't send them to the PhDs and universities and MDs and not give them something tangible. The Rav gave them Shas Paiskim. The Rebbe, by the way, agreed, but gave them Hadlakat Neirot. The Rebbe came under tremendous attack. 1972, Manny Hoses, how I thank him. He copied for me off the radio the whole Yutet Kislev Fabrenyan of the Rebbe. And I called the Rebbe to you. And the Rebbe's the fair, I'm under it. The Rebbe had a sense of humor like the Rav. Without a sense of humor, you don't survive in this world. And the Rebbe says, I'm saying it in English, yeah, the world's criticizing me. We do new things. Tell me, the Rebbe said. They don't read newspapers all over? Everyone reads the newspaper. That isn't new. Where did we get our news 100 years ago? And the Rebbe described, because it's in Shul Afn Dov, the courtyard of the Shul. Tzivishim Mincha Marev, between Mincha Marev. And everyone was passing the news. Yeah, we just heard 3 months ago in Paris what happened. 3 months ago in 3 months ago in Berlin. And that they do pass the news in the Shul courtyard today? No. Today they have a newspaper. All right. I'll plead guilty. I asked the girls to light Shabbos candles. And in this paper, they call upon emulating in Eastern Europe what they did in Germany. Secession. Different groups. They called the groups Yamin Shmo and Beinoniim. We should have three different groups from the Jews. To the right, to the left, and those in the middle. And that's what the Netziv picked up that Friday night when he read the newspaper, the periodical, and he was furious. And he decided to write a tshuva, Simin Mem Dalet, Al HaYamin VaAl HaSmol. All right. We'll get to it next week. Be'ezrat HaNatan LeYov Koach. And you'll understand where the Rav is coming from. See, it's amazing. Some parts of his character, it's the blood of the Beit HaLevi that went out. And some parts, it's the blood of the Netziv that wins out. My dear students, what have we done today? First of all, I want to thank everyone for honoring me with their presence. We have a unique crowd here. We have Klal Yisrael. Yossi, you don't realize. Chabad, Lakewood, Yekka. Charlie can still bear the title. I don't know whether his children or grandchildren deserve it. But he still is Washington Heights. German. You speak German, right?
No, not really.
Not really. Was ist mit Was hat gerät mit die Eltern? Why did you speak with your parents?
My parents refused to speak German.
Refused English. And now there are a lot of people after World War II. One time I told you, we have a minion in front of, in a parking lot. So yeah, it's many decades already. So we had a lot of Yekkers living on the block. You know, many are gone already. There was the Halberstam family. So I'm talking with Sam Dershowitz in English, and he tells us off. And he says he hasn't spoken a word of German since he came in Aliyah, only Hebrew. So I couldn't help, but I apologized to him. In the real world, he said, accept my apology. I told him off. I said, listen, you were running away. We came, we were running away from nothing. But we can still, not running away, we can speak a little English. But the truth is, it's the Ramban on Achodesh Hazalechem Rosh Chodesh. It's a whole machlokes between Machanchem here. And you know my viewpoint that integration is gradual. If you would hear the way my daughters speak Hebrew, my granddaughters, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, Baruch Hashem, I can afford to speak English. They're making up for it. Integration is gradual. My dear students, I want to repeat, it's a very important shiur today. It's the Netziv. It captures Voloshin, and it explains what goes on that Reb David Lifshitz, Yomo is going to walk out of class. I'm not any different than Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, or from the Reb David Lifshitz. And Yomo's right. If he says that, we have to agree with him. But there's the other side of the coin where you understand. They were not part of, imagine, shaving in Slobodka. Unheard of. Yeah, yes.
I mean, I want to ask you to comment on things. It's connected to this a little, or related though. Somebody has a feeling they don't want to be part of all the partisan fighting in Israel, and they want to rely on all the hechsherim, on the rabbanut and all the hechsherim. They don't want to start with this one again, right, this one. Right. They want to be like the Netziv in the realm of
right,
Kashrus.
Right.
I wanted to ask for you to comment.
No. You're dealing here with a reality. People won't eat in your house. But I tell you, I have no problem because I ain't eating milchiks and fish. So I rely on every hechsh. I can also tell you, in all the years I've lived here, I have never heard a scandal from the rabbinate. From any rabbinate that you mention, including the rabbinate of Rashid, I've never heard a scandal. And I can tell you better that in these places that have double, triple hashkacha, generally it's one mashgiach. And it's one Mashgiach who's accepted by all of them. But you're living in Shari Chesed. I had the terrible experience almost a year ago. Cholamoid Pesach. And my wife and I are not in the best of health. We're not youngsters. Unfortunately, we have to eat regular times. It's a sad story. I wish you could grow older and retain the body of 21. But Shia Shirim and Kohelet don't allow it, unfortunately. There's a conflict there. Two Hashgachas. So we're invited to an affair at the Renaissance Hotel on Chol Hamoed Pesach. Lunchtime. Do you know that they served no food? It's just a few vegetables. Maybe there were, I don't even know if there were cookies. We were starving. Idiots. You don't trust anybody? That's a statement. Kol Yisrael is trey. Put up a sign. This is for Rakefet. These cookies under the chief rabbi. This is for the Shari Chesed crowd, the Ashkacha of Echveis, what do they call it? The Yosef Gids, the Ashkacha. There there was a scandal type. What's it called? Kehilot, no, that began here. Kehilot, they say, is better than it was originally. Machzikei Hadat, no, that is bells. What's it called? Their newspaper. Sheirit Yisrael Ashkacha. Have here a sign. This fish is under the badats. Anyone doesn't eat, he's crazy. He's an idiot. What can be wrong with fish and you don't trust the badats? Come on. I wouldn't trust them on perhaps a chemistry question. They need advice from others, but they do get advice. I happen to know that the badats works hand in hand with the computer of the OU. And they have computer geniuses working for them. So that's my answer to you. But you're asking me, when people ask me, what restaurant, I said, Milchiks, you can eat in any restaurant in Jerusalem. I don't believe I quit my shalom. Find me something Milchiks, not kosher. You talk about meat? Yeah, there was a scandal not within walking distance of here. The proprietor of the shop was bringing in Arab meat. And he was caught. But that has nothing to do with the Rabbanut. It has to do. As Morty will tell you, he has a friend who has a catering business. The caterer once said to Morty what I've said all along. No hashgach in the world is worth anything if the balabas wants to cheat. Balabas is honest, basically you don't need hashgacha. Do you remember when I came in Aliyah and you came a few years later, on Mordechai ben Hillel, there was a Nugadisha bakery without any hashgacha. And when you walked in and asked Tuda, they were insulted. Tuda? Tishal b'mei sharim yefsal esmach aleinu. Later, they ultimately got a Tuda because all the crazy Americans don't understand. You don't need a Tuda. This is your mother's home. But all right. But that's a good question. But that's my answer. You're in a problem there because if you... But that event at the Renaissance... I walked out, Malka and I walked out. This is not Yiddishkeit. Malka comes from Dore of Frum Jews in America. She has great-great-grandparents buried in Queens. And Ribbono Shel Olam, Malka's grandfather had a beard. He blew his blowing shofar got me $1 million for the documentary on the Rav. You know the story. I went to Abe Lavovich, Seichet Tzadik, and Abe said to me, first of all, I love your books on the Rav. And secondly, you don't know the family connection. Your wife's grandfather used to blow shofar and daven shacharis for my grandfather's shtivel. He says, you have up to $1 million I'm responsible for. We didn't have to shnow one penny. And we spent over $990,000. We hired public service TV documentary. Top people. I'll end off with one funny story. Rabbi Lichtenstein's speech was never clear. He speaks very quickly, swallowed words. So they wanted to leave his interview out. They said, it doesn't meet our standards. So I said to them, look, if we don't have Rabbi Lichtenstein's interview, it hurts the authenticity of the movie. It must be that, you know what they did? Look at the documentary again. There's a typescript underneath when he speaks. You have a typescript so you can read it. Baruch Hashem. All right, I want to have a wonderful crowd in front of me until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vedanya Yomo. See if there are any questions around the world. We have to make room for Rabbi Betnashir. Jack, I see I wrote down, you had more questions on Rav Menashe Klein. I wrote something, but I don't know what your question was. But as far as the Netziv, I believe I've answered it. And the Netziv did have administrative abilities. The position developed him into a first-rate Rosh Yeshiva with administrative abilities, with students, with money, with all that went with to being Rosh Yeshiva. And that's what you see from the memoir literature. Yeah, go ahead. That's an open.
Recording stopped.
Yeah.
Just for the record, the Netziv's sister was married to the Aruch HaShulchan, so the Charetz Mima was literally his nephew.
Right. One second. The Netziv's sister was married to the Aruch HaShulchan, so the Tomiba was his nephew. And who did the Netziv marry? Bezivik Shady?
And he married his niece, his second wife, married, his own niece.
And married the Torah Tamima's sister. So I'm right. It was his brother-in-law and uncle.
I think he made the shidduch. I think the Torah Tamima made the shidduch or something like that.
That's what I think Rav Meir Berlin claims in his memoir. You have to take a look at it.
And she ran the yeshiva, they say. Like, she was the administrator.
She was a personality unto herself. And that will explain to you why she was a divorcee. She evidently was too strong for her first husband. All right, thank you.
If you say that he had a child when he was very old, and it's you saw the story about the Rosh Yeshiva, what was it, in Har Nof, I think. What's his name? I have to look up his name. He was 88 years old.
And he fathered a child?
He just had his first child. His first wife died. They didn't have children. And he remarried an older woman, but here it is. His name is Rav Tzvi Kushelevsky.
Kushelevsky, okay, sure, I know the family.
So he's 88 years old, and he just had a bris for his first child.
88 years old, and it's not adopted.
His wife is 50, something like that. So.
Wow.
Older than Rebbe.
88 years old, and father to child. Kala Kavald, okay. What are you laughing? You'll be 88, you'll be having great grandchildren, one after another, Be'ezrat Hashem. Okay, but wow. Kushelevsky, it's American origins. They lived in America, the Kushelevskys. Big Litvish Talmidei Chachamim. Yeah, are there any other questions?
Okay.
His wife was 56 when the child was born. All right, this is a medical case for the New Haven Medical Journal. What an achievement. All right, I want to thank everyone for being on screen. Thank you for honoring me with your presence. And we'll pick up. Yes, Ephraim, you want to ask anything? No, okay.
I want to mention that the David Lipschitz every Thursday would give a
Musa Shmuz. Reb David would give a Musa Shmuz every Thursday in his class.
In his class.
Right.
And I used to be the only one who would take notes. Uh-huh. So one day he said to me, Yitzchak, what schreibst du? A Brit or a Vedel? He couldn't understand. He said, this is not going to be on the test. Why are you taking notes?
Uh-huh.
He couldn't understand that I was taking notes. He gave very fine Musa.
Yeah, no, Reb David was Reb David, and that makes sense that for his class on Thursday would add a little bit of a Musa Shmuas. Listen, when I taught in BMT, I remember before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, before Pesach, I'd always say in Yonah D'Yayma to inspire a little. All right, and Be'ezrat Hashem, we're going to pick up here on April 8th. We're going to pick up BMT again with it's our people. The history, a little microcosm of what we go through in modern times. Until we meet again in health and happiness.
One more thing, Rebbe. I remember on Rosh Chodesh Adar, Rav David Benoist put up a sign in the Beis Medrash, Mishenichnas Adar Ma'am in Simcha Eretz Torah.
Yeah, we put them up here in Yeshiva.
They still do it. I think Yitzchak Kohen kept doing it after he passed away.
Mishenichnas Adar Ma'am b'Simcha v'yein Simcha Eretz Torah.
Right.
Yeah. Beautiful.
We still put them up in Gross.
The Netziv would agree with that. Okay, until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'danya.